I will call this meeting to order at 6:01 PM. This is our joint Assembly School Board meeting for Tuesday, September 11th. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
I will, Mr. Mayor. Jim Sykes.
Here, here, here.
How many were there? Matthew Beck.
Here.
George McKee. Ted Leonard.
Here.
Dan Mayfield.
Here.
Barbara Doty.
Yep, I'm here.
Randall Kowalki will not be present. Deborah Rutherford.
Here.
Ray Michelson.
Here.
Ole Larson.
Here.
Sarah Welton.
Here.
Yvonne Ruth will not be present. Kelsey Trimmer.
Here.
Donna Dearman.
Here.
You do have a quorum of both bodies, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And I want the record to reflect that Assemblymember McKee looks marvelous tonight. Okay, let's take a look at the agenda. Any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, the agenda is approved as amended. And let's have Superintendent Goyett lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're at audience participation. This is your opportunity to speak to the Assembly and the School Board about anything you wish. We do have a sign-up list, and we'll start with that. We have one, Bill Kendig. Would you please start us out? Welcome.
Bill Kendig. I just wanted to bring up, it's something that's going to be in front of you, maybe a little bit more than a month, hasn't yet, but School Board Resolution 18-003, where the school district's going to purchase charter schools. Our concern isn't the purchase of the charter schools, that we're not even going to dwell on that. And it's a growing list of some citizens and a fast-growing list. Our concern is the use of the COP and circumventing the voters on such a large purchase amount of money. I'm just going to keep it real vague tonight because, you know, it'll progress as you go along and you guys will see it. But I just want to let you know that there is a growing number of citizens that are pretty concerned about this. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's all we have in the sign-up list. Anybody else in the audience wish to speak for 3 minutes to the school board and assembly? Seeing none, we will close audience participation and go to our joint. Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to thank Mr. Kendig for coming forward. And, you know, if it's really possible to save taxpayer dollars to buy instead of paying perpetual rent, I'd like a little bit more information from our financial director and our attorney at a future date.
Okay. Joint items of business. A, 6A, building construction progress and review of capital construction plan. Do we have an update on this program, construction progress? Who's gonna?
Yes, we do, Mayor Halter. It's my pleasure to invite Mike Brown, Executive Director of our Operations and Maintenance and IT, and he will be doing the presentation for you tonight. And I know that we do not have PowerPoint visual technology, but we did make copies for all of you of the presentation that he'll walk you through.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, President Dearman, Assembly and School Board members, Mike Brown. I'll give you a brief update on what we're calling our facilities blueprint. So I'm gonna walk you through the slide deck that you have before you tonight. There's also an accompanying document. The document is in your right hand. The slide deck should be in your left. Right, so the document is about 14, 15 pages. So it's a little bit more thorough and detailed. What I'm gonna do is hit highlights that I think are relevant to the joint body tonight. So I'm on slide two, blueprint purpose. So the document that you have before you is intended to describe how we maintain, develop, and plan facilities for schools. Additionally, it describes in more detail major maintenance, minor maintenance, and capital planning efforts, and how we do that. That's all right. I'm okay with that. So I'm going to go on to the next slide for the agenda. There's just three things I'm going to touch on briefly. We're going to talk a little bit about statutory responsibilities, so what the state prescribes for school districts and boroughs in terms of how they delineate those responsibilities for maintaining schools. Talk a little bit about some of the funding, really two primary funding opportunities, and then we'll walk you through briefly kind of how we do capital planning. I'm on to the next slide, which the title says statutory responsibilities. So state statute delineates responsibilities to boroughs that include major rehabilitation, construction, and major repair of school buildings. So you see with your capital projects department how that work is managed and developed, and oversight's provided by borough staff. School districts are given the responsibilities of custodial services and routine maintenance. So that's where you see our operations and maintenance or facilities workforce. The partnership, I would say, that we have between the district's facilities department and the borough's capital projects department, I think is functioning very well, and it is getting very good results from their collaborative work. As part of the school district's responsibilities, we have five key areas that are required by the state to qualify for state funding. Those are those five areas that are listed on the slide before you. That's just to make you aware that we do have certain requirements that we have to make sure we're hitting our marks on in order for DEED to recognize grant opportunities and bond debt reimbursement funding. So I'm moving on to the next slide, that titled Bond Debt and Grant Reimbursements, the top. So as you're all aware, the bond debt reimbursement program has been suspended and will be lifted there, or will return to service July 1st of 2020. In the past, boroughs could qualify for 70-30 or 60-40 funding. So by that we mean we could qualify for state reimbursement funding for 70% or 60% funding, depending on how you filled out your applications. When reinstated, that program is expected to be funded at 50-50. The district has continued to update its six-year CIP plan during this period and submit grant applications, even though the program was suspended. So we continue to do that capital planning work regardless of the fact that we pretty clear that the state was not going to provide any funding for capital improvements. And then I'll talk about that six-year CIP and give you a quick glance at that and kind of how we manage that process internally to the school district. I'm on to the next slide, which is operating fund transfer. So this is just something that we want to make you aware of that we're doing internally within the school district. This is funding that is approved by the school board that gets transferred from our operating funds into our CIP account or capital improvement project accounts. And we do that to meet emerging needs where bond debt reimbursement is not available, as it isn't today, or things that may, a project that may take 2 to 3 years to develop. So examples include portables. So where we have to go in and put portables at schools to meet growth within the borough, this is one way that we meet that need and are able to leverage portables at existing school sites across the borough to meet enrollment projections. Additionally, there are things like Americans with Disabilities Act, so ADA upgrades that are needed at schools to meet special needs or purchase special equipment. We'll sometimes use CIP funds to do that. And safety and security infrastructure improvements is another area where we see those needs emerge that we need to be responding to quickly. This is a mechanism that we're using internally to accomplish those things with the school board approval. So I'm moving on to the next slide, which will talk a little bit more about capital planning. And I'll kind of just touch on that, like I said earlier, for the things that are relevant to this joint body. So I'm going to move on to the next slide, which is titled Deferred Maintenance. So really, for deferred maintenance, really what you need to understand about that is it's just the postponing of maintenance needs. So DEED, the Department of Education and Early Development, the state, prescribes for us a model by system within a building for what that life cycle or lifespan of a system should be. So we are required to follow that model and project renewal and replacement schedules based on that model. So we do that. The state model, because it's a state model, doesn't really recognize differences in the environment, the materials available or materials that have been used in school construction, and the site type. Obviously, that varies across the state pretty greatly or pretty widely. So What we've done here with this graphic is describe for you our approach, which is where we send our maintainers out into schools, and they make those assessments for themselves, and then our capital planning and construction manager takes that data and projects that, projects our own model that's different from the state. So what we're finding, and really the key takeaway here, is that we're getting significantly more life out of systems than what the deed or state projection calls for. So for example, our average life remaining system lifespan, according to our, the deed model, is 10.34 years. Whereas when we apply our model to that, we would get 16.14 years. So it recognizes that, yes, we need to do what the state's asking us to do in terms of projecting that, but at the same time, we need to look at specifically how our facilities and systems are performing and make our projections and capital planning around that. As of this year, and really what that means in terms of a hard number funding-wise, is according to the deed model, we would have $209 million in deferred maintenance compared to $145 million as projected by our model within the district. I'm moving on to the next slide, which has the title six-year CIP list at the top. So this is that six-year capital improvement project listing that I talked about. This is a deed requirement. We follow their format for how we project that. So they have specific ways that they want to receive that information from all school districts. This six-year plan is updated annually and is approved by the school board. Over the past few years, really two main things we've been doing to try to refine this list. Number one, we've been working hard to reduce annual estimated project cost. So we're trying to dial this thing in to where we're not asking for exorbitant amounts of funding on an annual basis that we know couldn't realistically be funded. And number two, we're emphasizing a focus on maintaining existing facilities. So this plan is in the facilities blueprint document itself as an appendix, and we intend to update that on an annual basis so that that's made known, and we continue to show folks what that looks like as it's updated on an annual basis. The other key thing here is those top five projects that are shown in the FY20 column were all submitted to the state this year as grant applications. So we do continue to chase that program, even though it's not likely to yield any results at this point. We continue to do that. So it's already embedded into our annual processes for how we project capital needs. And then lastly, this last slide titled Funding Plan, this is kind of what we wanted to pitch as a concept tonight. So in 2011, voters approved a $214 million school bond. We recognize that the mega bonds aren't good for a number of reasons, some of which is we incur a lot of debt at one point in time, but it's also very difficult to execute those projects, that volume of projects with the staff that we have by creating this large bubble. So when the bond debt reimbursement moratorium is lifted in 2020, the district would like to consider a three-year rotation for school bond debt reimbursement that preserves current school bond debt levels at approximately $1 million annually. So, and I'll describe that a little bit further. The chart that you see before you shows a schedule that would replace retiring bond debt with new bonds over time while preserving the borough's approximately $10 million payout annually. So what you see before you is the blue is bond debt that's retiring over time, and the orange would be potentially new bond debt that we would take on to maintain the facilities that we have. So if we were to utilize an approach like this in 2020 when the moratorium's lifted, that would look like a $49 million bond. In 2023, it would be a $12 million bond. In 2026, that would be a $28 million bond. And I only give you those numbers just to give you a sense for the volume of the funding that we're talking about here. And the table is included in section 5.0 of the document that shows this laid out over time. So there's a table with all of those details in the document. We just didn't put all of that detail on the slide. So I guess my parting comment with this, with the state reduction from a 70-30 to a 50-50, because the district was going after 70-30 funding before, we weren't using the 60-40 model. So with a reduction from 70-30 to 50-50, this actually would result in a decrease in overall funding for school projects from previous expenditures, but still allows us to establish a sustainable approach, which does recognize current debt funding levels. So in other words, it wouldn't call for a tax increase. It would just allow us to replenish retiring debt with new debt and use that funding to replace and maintain schools according to that six-year CIP. So, at this point, that concludes my presentation if there are questions.
Senator McKee?
I have three. The funding plan that I'm looking at here, does that include certificates of participation, or is it just bond debt?
Through the mayor to Mr. McGee, that is only bond debt. So, it does not include COP.
Okay, but in fact, the COP is carried as bond debt. So why is it not on this chart this way? It is a debt that has to be paid by the taxpayers. Why is it not on here?
Through the mayor to Mr. McKee, it does qualify as debt. Certainly, I would not contend with that at all, but it would not qualify under bond debt as defined by the state.
Okay, number two, okay. I don't see anything in here where there's any effort to contain costs. Has the school district looked, since the borough owns all the buildings, the school district owns none. In fact, give all the maintenance above the first level back to the borough. That would decrease your amount of funding by a substantial amount. Have you looked at that?
Through the mayor to Mr. McKee, I would go back to the statutory responsibilities that's laid out in state statute that talks about that division of responsibilities. That was the reason we included that in here, is just recognizing how the state's chosen to organize and align responsibilities between school districts and boroughs.
Excuse me, I also have looked at those statutes, and there is nothing that would preclude the borough from taking over total maintenance of the buildings that they own.
Through the mayor to Mr. McGee, I would defer to the attorney on the legalities of it. I'm simply describing for you how school districts and boroughs are aligned and how we've been doing business for as long as I can tell.
But maybe we should do business differently.
Through the mayor to Mr. McGee, I would certainly entertain any cost-saving measures. We do a lot of work internally already to figure out how can we contain costs. The reality is, though, we do have $1 billion of assets that we are going to have to maintain if, as a community, we decide to keep our infrastructure at a level that it is currently maintained at.
Excuse me, the borough has $1 billion worth of assets.
Okay.
Through the mayor to Mr. McKee, that is correct.
I would like to interject, though, Mr. Assemblymember McKee, that just as an example of cost savings, 2 years ago, we reduced our custodial staffing costs by $800,000. That's an annual renewable. And one of the things that we're doing is asking kids to help stack chairs and pick up trash off the floor. And I think that's a good thing. And put trash out in the hallways, get it out of the basket. So we are working very hard, as you heard through GFOA last year. And one of the areas that they were concerned about that was an outlier for us was the amount of money that we underspend compared to other districts in the area of operations and maintenance. We were about 10% lower than what other districts spend. But I don't ever want that to infer that we aren't grateful that the buildings that you let us occupy and that we do take tremendous care of them. And so I think we are doing a good job in that area.
Okay, we got Senator Sykes and Senator Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through the mayor to Mr. Brown. On the six-year CIP list, where it shows that you're building a new school, is that the full price, regardless of whether it's a 50-50 match or 60-40 or 30-70? Is that the full price of the project, or is that just our share?
That's the full price.
Okay, thank you.
Now, Senator Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to make the comment that I believe that the school district, our partners in raising a healthy community, and that they're being good stewards with what might be legally defined as the borough assets, but I think that we share them together, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Other questions? Mr. Larson?
Go ahead.
Mr. Trimmer?
Go ahead, Kelsey.
I just wanted to echo Dr. Goyette's statement today. My one of my kids at Colony Middle was shown as absent, and so I confronted him for his last class, and he said, "I wasn't absent. I had an excuse tardy. I was out doing the recycling bins." So the kids are pitching in to help.
Mr. Larson?
It's not a borough school board separation, which was pointed out to me, I don't know, when I first got on the board a long time ago, that we're a We're a sub-board to the Borough Assembly. And our employees are Borough Assembly employees as well as state employees. So we're all one group. And we work together to maintain these buildings as one group. We have the lowest per capita maintenance, for instance, but they're dedicated. And they also have everybody else pitching in. The state CIP list that we give them every year has not come up with any money. Is that correct? Have we ever received any money from the state for maintenance at all?
Through the mayor, Mr. Larson, no. We don't receive funding from the state for maintenance outside of the funding formula that's part of our operating
budget. Do other districts receive CIP money from the state?
There is a grant process that we follow, but recently only schools that are in dire need, like there's a roof that must be replaced in a rural village, that's the only thing we've seen the state come alongside deed specifically and provide funding for in recent years.
So if our buildings were in dire need, we might be able to get money from the state.
Through the mayor to Mr. Larson, yes, if it was dire.
Okay, and over the last 10 years, I've never seen any money come to this district from the state when they had a lot of money. Am I wrong on that?
No, through the mayor to Mr. Larson, I believe that's correct. I mean, outside of the bond debt reimbursement program.
Yeah, the bond reimbursement, yes. But we've never received money, and the state had a lot of CIP money. They were building a lot through grants for other districts outside our district, and since we maintain our buildings so well and we pitch in and have this long-term goal and maintain, we can never get this grant money, and we haven't been able to for the last 10 years. Is that correct?
Through the mayor to Mr. Larson, I mean, we do everything that we can within the scoring criteria to score high, because we obviously would want to qualify for it, but not to the degree that we would neglect maintenance.
So in order to get it, we would have to neglect maintenance in order to get that money, because we would have deplorable or schools falling down.
Through the mayor to Mr. Larson, I think that's fair. I mean, unless we had a catastrophic failure of some system or something that was unforeseen.
Well, then everybody pitches in under those criteria, such as a roof blown off a charter school, right, where everybody pitched in to help there. That's the frustrating part, is if you maintain your facilities and do the job that you're supposed to between the borough and the school district, there is no state money. So we have to bond out in order to do major maintenance to make sure that our schools are up to snuff, and we want that. Is that our goal? Is that our philosophy?
Through the mayor to Mr. Larson, I think that's fair.
I have a question.
Well, Ms. Rutherford, it's next in line.
Okay.
And then we'll come back to you.
Thank you. The Americans with Disability Act improvements, I recognize that they're just the right thing to do, but do we get audited by an outside entity for those, or is it, do we do our own audit to see what needs to be done? Or how do we determine where we still have to do those?
Through the mayor to Ms. Rutherford, I'm not aware of any audit for ADA. I mean, there are mandates around that. So what we do is we work with schools, principals specifically. There may be a child that's maybe moving from an elementary school to a middle school that will require special needs at that school where that wasn't required the year before, or something based on the student population. So that's what I was referring to when I talked about emerging needs. So we do that coordination in advance, and then we make sure that we have projects lined up to accommodate those needs in advance of the need, ideally. And sometimes it's things like handicap door operators, things like that, where that infrastructure may not exist in a specific setting.
Now, Senator McKee. I'm going to go back to what Mr. Larson said. Have you ever gone for a bond for school district maintenance? I don't think that's permissible.
Through the mayor to Mr. McGee, not for maintenance.
Thank you.
Now,
that's all.
Okay.
One quick question. We've gone for bond for major renovation projects, which maintenance cannot do, correct?
Through the mayor to Mr. Larson, please correct me, sir, if I'm wrong, is minor maintenance. like we do not project for bond debt reimbursement for minor maintenance.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Brown? Okay, none. Let's go on to agenda item B under six. Superintendent Goyet?
Yeah, this item actually was left over from the spring. That meeting ran late, and so it was an item that we just deferred. And actually, the request that we made has been moved forward with your road package. So there is nothing that we need to discuss further at this time on that item.
Okay, thank you. How about number C?
So item C, enrollment update. So if you look in the Manila folder, there is a PowerPoint presentation that has the Joint School Board Assembly, and the next four items will all be in the same place for you. Hopefully that'll be easier as we move through. So the first one, I just want to share with you how our enrollment is going. And this first one is just simply our enrollment trends for the past 10 years. And as you can see, we continue to grow. That growth is slowing down, but nonetheless continues to maintain. And so as we look into this year, on the next slide, this is just a detailed chart for you. I think it's interesting when you represent districts, you always like to know how the schools are doing in your area. If they're in red, that means they're under projection. So what's in parentheses means they're below. And overall, right now, we're 130 students under projection. But a significant amount of those are in our homeschool program, and it's typical that that continues to enroll later. Our official count for the state will be October 1st through it's the first 20 school days of October. And so it's at the end of October when we know what our official average daily membership is, and also what our intensive resource, our intensive funding students count is. But for right now, we're feeling really good. And one of the areas that is often very stressful for our rural schools, because they're very small, is that they are shrinking, and overall our rural schools are up by 8. So that's always a great sign for those areas. And finally, the last slide I have on enrollment, and then I can take questions on it, is just, I know I talk about this a lot, but I just really want to put out there what it means for our community and for educating kids when so many of our students are living in poverty. In 2003, 1 in 3 students qualified for free and reduced lunch. Today, that's 44%, which is almost every other student in a classroom. And so we really have a lot of challenges then. For us to accomplish our goals of student learning, we need to make sure that they feel safe. I'm going to be talking about school safety tonight. We need to make sure that that they're fed and that they can move on then and focus on the things that we want them to be learning. So I'm happy to answer any questions about enrollment.
Questions? On enrollment? And these poverty rates are certainly alarming, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we'll move on to the item D, Superintendent.
Yes, so this was a request by Assemblymember Leonard. And so I have a few slides that I'm going to share with you, but in your packet is also our Keeping Schools Safe report that really outlines for you in great detail what we do in the area of prevention and response when it comes to safety. But as you can see in the first slide with all of the dots across it, we've really taken school safety incredibly serious over the last few decades. And many of the best practices that are outlined in national reports are things that we already have in place in our infrastructure. But with not just the continued school violence that happens, but really what felt like last spring an escalation of school violence, we wanted to take the opportunity to do a gap analysis and really learn from our community what we could do better. And so we did a school community staff, students, and community members survey on what things that they would like to see happening in our schools. And we took those results to our school board at the retreat in June, and we developed this year's objectives. And really, we divided them over into four areas. The first one is people. And tomorrow, we have 25 people that are coming to do tabletop exercises with us. Palmer Police, Wasilla Police, your borough emergency crisis response folks, and district office. And really run through scenarios that if there was a school violence, how our agencies would work together. We're very excited that the Palmer SRO started at the beginning of this year, and she is doing a fantastic job. That's a joint effort with the Palmer Police Department. Wasilla Police Department, as you know, a lot of our schools are out of jurisdiction, and with the trooper shortage, it's not something that they can commit to having troopers in our schools. So Wasilla was willing to go outside of jurisdiction and approved two SROs, one in the Colony area and one in the Houston area. And we're hoping that starts in spring, but it may start in the fall based on training of those new troopers. And then, of course, expansion of mental health services with our incredible partner on all of this work, the Matsu Health Foundation. In professional development, I won't go through all of those, but I do want to pick out a couple things. We train all our principals in the incident command system. Your incident emergency response is going to be coming over and doing a live training of that for all of our principals this year, an area that we collaborate and share services. We really appreciate that expertise. We have a tip line that we are really pushing out. It's something that's a national best practice that kids and parents can report things either anonymously or with their name directly to their principal. And we are in classes trying to get all kids to download this app. It's an area that, you know, they could take a picture of a screenshot and just upload it and send it directly to their principal. Amy Spargo, our assistant superintendent, gets every single one of those reports. And as you know, teens are up late at night, and she is monitoring that, and we really appreciate that. We're revising our policies and procedures. We're going to be bringing our student advisory board in and helping us revise all our students' rights and responsibilities. We're really working. We are very involved with the state. We've been asked next week. There's 3 days of a statewide safety summit. Our report is a model for the state. We've been asked to do quite a few presentations at that and really target some legislative funding that would be directly towards school safety. So we'll be updating our report that will have our 3 to 5 year plan, and we will share that with the board this fall, and we can certainly come back and share that. And then in terms of just infrastructure, one of the things that teachers worry about is if there was an automatic lockdown, if there's not a latch inside their door, that they would need to go out into the hallway if they were not keeping their doors locked, even though we want them to all keep their doors locked. So we installed an internal safety latch on all those doors this summer. We are piloting remote locking doors at the front. This is one of those balanced things between a warm and welcoming environment where our community can come into schools. And so we're going to move slowly on being buzzed into schools during school hours, but we're going to try that at Finger Lake and then at a remote school. And then just upping really our focus in our annual site facilities. So that's all I have on the school safety update.
Questions? Summer Beck, we'll start with you. Summer Doty next.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. To the mayor, I just I have in my mind the incident at Palmer High School that happened where the people walked in and took stuff right out of the locker room. And I haven't got a full report of everything that happened. I have a good understanding, but obviously you must be keeping that in mind as you're moving ahead and addressing all this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, our schools are in tremendous use outside of the school day. And so what happened, our two former Matsu Borough School District students, they're no longer with us, they're graduated, they're in their early 20s. They went into Colony High School, into the locker rooms, and just took whatever they could. And then they drove over to Palmer High School, and they took whatever they could out of locker rooms there. They're both familiar with the building, how to navigate that. And you can imagine at a comprehensive high school, when you have the football team, cross country running team, cheerleading team, and then all of our academic clubs, there's hundreds of kids moving in and out with the front office shut down during that time. We don't staff in the evenings. And so our new Palmer SRO, kids pinged their phones, and she was able to work with the police department and find the individuals that did this, and the Palmer Fred Meyer parking lot, and we were able to return all the items to students immediately. And so one of the things that we're working on right now is really making sure that we are vigilant even in those off-hour times, making sure that our locker rooms are locked, that kids, oftentimes kids will give them a locker, but they like to get in quick, and so they'll close the lock, but they won't spin the dial. So just really working on doing that. So we, it's a lesson learned, and we're certainly taking advantage of the lesson.
They should let me set bail on those two the next time they come through. Senator Doty?
Thank you. Two questions. One is a comment. I was happy to see the AEDs listed on here. I happen to have been unfortunate enough to be in 1997, the first responder to a collapse and death of a student on campus in the nurse's office. And it took, at that time, 45 minutes to get a response from the EMS system back in the 90s. So I'm glad we've improved. I raised the question about maybe we should have AEDs or better equipment at the nurse's station. And at that point in time, it was not advocated for. So thank you. The second comment.
You're welcome. And can I just make one quick comment on that? AEDs are very expensive. And when you buy them in bulk, they're much cheaper. And so I really want to give a shout out to Luke Fulp and his business services. They secured AEDs at our price for many rural districts so that they were able to get it at our price. We're saving money for other districts and get that out there. So we, too, are huge supporters of that.
The second comment is really how we're rolling this safety protocol out to the parents. And I think it's really important that families are familiar with and normalize the process, because if it's unfamiliar, I think it's very difficult for you know, and there are events where there are people besides just students on campus. And so how are the parents, grandparents, whoever it is that's doing the transportation back and forth and getting the feedback from the students, how are they getting informed of this program and feeling comfortable with it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the things that was glaringly obvious to us in our survey was we believed that we had these practices in place, but parents didn't. And we did. Like, it's, you know, it's a matter of fact, either you have cameras or you don't have cameras. They absolutely did not know about all of the safety and security infrastructure that we have. I did a Facebook Live event, which is very good at connecting with people, but probably not my favorite thing to do. Over 2,000 views. We're going to continue to do that. We have a bunch of public safety announcements that are coming out around this. And Jillian Morrissey, our public information officer, worked with principals on, we just have to constantly, every month in all of our newsletters, let our families know what we do to keep their kids safe, because that was our biggest gap in our gap analysis, was their understanding of how seriously we take this and what we do.
Senator Leonard, and then Senator McKee.
Well, I appreciate everything that you're doing, Superintendent Gill. A quick question for you, though, is as we struggle with the incident response with the troopers. I mean, having 31 troopers for 24,000 square miles. How do you build the probably lag in certain schools that we would have for an incident response into your plan? Because we're not like down south where you know you'll have a police officer there and 15 minutes, or at the city of Wasilla, where I can call and know I'll have one. But then you hear stories of our neighborhoods outside of the city where they may not get one at all. So how do you build that issue that we have overall with not having enough troopers for our borough into your plans?
So this is our commitment to increasing our student resource officers so that we have an arm present in our really our highest density areas. So Colony Middle, Colony High are right next door to each other, Valley Pathways. And typically these things happen in secondary schools. Over 95% of school violence is in secondary schools. They would certainly deploy and help in other elementary areas. Another thing that we're looking at is our remote locking doors, that during the school day doors are locked, you have to be buzzed in. And another thing that we're going to be piloting and looking at, and it's controversial, but in our really remote areas, we could never afford to have an SRO at Glacier View. There's only 24 students there, or at Sioux Valley, is gun safes on campus. And what that protocol would look like, what that looks like with our insurance company, disabilities, who would have access to that, but there are models out there for that. And so it's a hybrid approach. But the most important part to this, a disgruntled student, they're not by somebody that isn't connected to that school. It's by contact with adults, and they just become more disgruntled, and they come into the schools and do this. So need additional help. And one of the things that we're working really hard on this year is threat assessment. We no longer formally expel any students. So while a student you may bring to that school site, you can have the option to go to our day school, your diploma there. And we have two of our best staff at building relationships. And here, one, unfortunately, we haven't been able to get to come to this, but one we have, that kid is making better connections with these kids that are of greatest risk to us.
To pursue his question just a little bit, you have two on-call police. It would take from them to go from one school to another, and here's the reason: 20 to 40 dead kids. Have you ran a drill to see another?
Yeah, and we can certainly do that, but the reality is school shootings last a couple minutes, and so before safety a presence gets there. I mean, that is statistically how those commit homicides, and then they commit suicide on site. And so armed police officers is, quite frankly, cost prohibitive.
Of course, and what have you. And many, by the way, many school districts are doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we're not shy. We asked the question on our survey. We have a responsibility to bend to the will of our community, but it was very divisive or hard on the other. So where we are right now is looking at that gun safe and how on every avenue that we can. But for right now, through law enforcement.
Ms. Rutherford?
And their awareness. Aren't we looking at some the community, like parents down the road, about threat assessment and what?
Absolutely. It's a tiered plan of training. We'll start with our school staff, then we'll move on training students to recognize suicidal ideation in other students. And so the same.
Has there been a major violence? Excuse me.
20 years. And to my knowledge, there has not been. Really, in the state of Alaska, the one that probably.
And that's totally out of your
not
turf.
That I can remember, at least not that I can remember in the last two decades.
Carry and conceal, and a student could?
Teachers, with permission.
But students, totally banned from bringing
absolutely
weapons inside.
Just for information, that school shooting in Bethel, their 20th anniversary, that were students during that school shooting, and to talk to them on where we're at.
No, I understand that. Any other questions?
So we are on to Rock Matsu, Assembly Member.
Thank you. Good evening. Children with kindness. You should have two handouts from me. One is a sheet with a bunch of on where we are with all of our strategies in 2018. Before and our relationship with the Matsu Borough School District. So in 2013, community members across the borough to identify the top concerns that they saw for our community. Overwhelmingly, the number one goal that the community identified was all children are well. Could create a community where every family thrives, is that there is no one on child abuse prevention. So we have the Office of Children's Services, and they intervene in the lives of children and families, like school districts or medical providers alone. Looks at what it means to create a system where all families thrive, convened 18 influential champions from across Matsu, and asked to have strong, resilient families and safe children here in Matsu. And those 18 services, the Matsu Borough School District, behavioral health providers, early childhood educators, and overwhelmingly the response was yes. Our community was ready to tackle this issue. Now, what it means for individual organizations to come together around a collective goal, staff to support the partners of Rock Matsu in helping to build toward this goal that all children. Over 30 community partners working on 16 strategies that span the public. It means that some of our work focuses on this idea that all families are resilient and strong. And on the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, since 2014, we've actually trained over 16 when our community was surveyed in a representative household survey, over which lays that really important framework of creating a community that's ready for prevention public spaces. So we, for example, host an annual community baby shower I also provide community dance parties. So we have a Hello Kitty DJ that is racial connections and reduce their social isolation. And that's really the point of our primary, that no matter who you are as a family, you feel welcomed and supported. Then we have serve children and families, so that if a family is at risk of maltreatment, things don't, as a family has already experienced maltreatment, how do we strengthen systems that support those families? Some examples of that are we helped to launch the Palmer Families of Infants and Toddlers, with very young children entering the child welfare system, trying to reduce the amount of time those see. We've also done a lot of work with the Office of Children's Services. So for example, system for families with children in out-of-home care, because we know that one of the number one of maltreatment is that they have time to visit with each other when children are in out-of-home placement. To invest in this work in the traditional way of creating grants and funding or community-created solutions to addressing community challenges. And we see that very different from the community solutions in Wasilla. And we reflect that work by having community that our work is translating to what fits for their communities. We also guide us. So we're expanding our work recently to include ways to participate in shaping what we do next. We're also in the process of creating a youth leader, parents in our outlying communities to help them see how they can raise issues and then help to build. Abuse is a complex social problem. And like all complex social problems, it can't be solved by, and that that's because organizations and sectors bring their everything from buildings to everything. So greatest partners in this work, and that's the Mat-Su Borough School District. So when we started in 2000, we were very lucky because we truly believe that they helped shape our work in a really opportunity every day to positively impact the kids that they have contact with. And our two founders helped us to make sure that the work we were planning reflected the needs of the children that they saw every day. And it was also one of our original ACE interface trainers, and I truly believe that she has probably trained since we started. Over time, however, that relationship grew beyond just schools to all district staff person approached me and said, what would it look like if you brought the work of Rock Mat-Su? And that ask was pretty easy. Let's work together to create trauma-informed schools, attainment levels. And we know that when you create trauma-informed schools, children learn better, so we could remove barriers from education and help kids succeed. The district, the National Council for Behavioral Health and Rock Mat-Su, by the time we currently have 15 schools lined up for next year. Last week, in the state of Alaska, when it came to education, the video that they played to kids about the trauma-informed schools work being done here in Mat-Su, which was already doing with capturing kids' hearts, we've been able to bring in other supports of Rock Mat-Su. Cohort of trauma-informed schools receives training on the ACE education before and to some work we're doing called our Caring Communities Movement. So how do we create a community where everyone is affected by systemic racism? So we've had staff from the school district attend us. We have our local tribal partners share the impact of thousands of years before settlers were here. And then we end with a really uplifting, advancing Native. So I mentioned earlier that the National Council video for them as a community that's delving into this work in a way that no other community in Alaska is doing thing. But I would also say that what it really ought to bring is a recognition that our community is passionate. Every sector steps up to the plate and says, I'm ready to turn my work to the work of solving.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions or?
Your work and the success that you've had, and I hope that it keeps up, I think.
Just in full disclosure, Desiree and I work together at the Mat-Su Health Foundation, but about working differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is to really to do things differently, because a lot of the work that we've done for years and years, and we really need to kind of reach out and support programs that do things differently so we can learn. Not just a project, this is a long-term commitment on. So, Rock Mat-Su has really spanned a lot of those of our community, and I think we can all agree that really starts with our children. Mm-hmm. And this how important this work is and how it can be hopefully can really in programs like this. So thank you.
Summer Doty.
Tables, and even though I've done the training, when someone says this is a trauma, it is. Right. And so I'm going to give you a scenario, and I'd like you to respond in alternative to something else. So if you've got a fourth grader that's constantly acting out, and he's disruptive, and I just can't manage him, how would that get handled in a trauma-informed school?
That is a great question. So one of the things that we, what's wrong with you to what's happened to you. So I think it really begins with that mindset, unable to sit still or not paying attention and thinking, oh gosh, what's wrong with you? But really thinking what many things that happen at the broad classroom level that would have de-escalation techniques. So let's blow up a bubble and a balloon and let's a scale of 1 to 5. How are you feeling right this minute? Did you just flip your lid? And in those, every child benefits from it. That's really the piece I always talk about is why trauma informed to every child, where disruptions are minimized and children are given the opportunity to participate.
I have to add in on that a little bit though, because we do management to teach them self-regulation, but there's also a place for consequence. Because something bad might have happened to you doesn't mean that you got to do something bad to somebody else. So if I want to make that very clear, and that this is important work. It's important for people up for success when they come home, but it is traumatic for a kid that watches a fight happen, where we're moving from overly punitive practices to practices where it, as long as I'm around, we're still going to have that balance of being sensitive.
No, that was wonderful clarification. Thank you.
Ms. Rutherford?
This list, one of them, though, that really jumped out at me that I'm wondering how are you partnering with the state to do that?
Yes. So OCS is, again, very supportive of this work, and that has really worked its way up. Actually survey staff and ask them what they felt would help them feel. Hosting what we're calling community connection events, where we identify a section of OCS staff on what it is that they do, and then we produce a manual for them. So we said, this person needs this type of service, but they had no idea who was providing that service. So what we found is this creates individual connections. We've seen that services faster. So it's kind of that same trickle down.
Okay, Madam Superintendent,
Member Sykes, it's our last item that we have, and Assembly Member Sykes out.
He wants 30 pages.
I will. I will explain. MAP is Measures of Adequate Progress. It is now I want to know if you line up 100 third graders, where is my kid going to be in that line, right? For that. So, but you know, 75 and above would be the last school year. And you can see in second grade, are them up just below the 80th, or 10th grade, just below the 80th percentile. Just looked at our district as a whole, we'd be 50. So as a district, if you worry. And why, and Desiree talked about this, why early childhood learning is so. We recently had, when we were doing kindergarten roll-in, a parent and the student didn't finger strength to be able to learn how to print. But it takes a while to do that. And if you, as they get better, pretty soon they can keep it within smaller lines. So those things, I'm really prepare kids for school. So we see the same trend if you move on to math. So we're making great gains. We making more than a full year of education. And you can see in math here, I've talked to you about this. We're also hiring math tutors at our sixth grade middle schools. Data, it's going to be a little bit different. So if you move on, lines up compared to MAP data. So this graph, the very colorful graph, if you look at the left-hand scale, that is all the way across 37%. When kids used to take this where they needed to land to be proficient, then we would predict that they were on track to be proficient at their grade level in the state assessment. Dramatically changed. Where the green bar starts is where they show proficiency to be proficient. In eighth grade reading, that moves up to about the 65th. And this is one that I really struggle with. In eighth grade, we might have us performing better, and only 25 that are ahead of them, and they are below proficient. They're dismal, and we're not pleased with ours, but the rigor of the new standards as a state to increase the bar for our students, and that's a good thing. I just in mathematics year after year after year, and now all of a sudden they're below proficient. So in turning that slide, I want to show you our recent peak that proficient in English language arts and 37% in math. Which we should. The challenges in rural Alaska are a much more significant. What we're super proud of, and this is the first time, that in both literacy and math, and Juneau, they have a very different demographic than we do. So to do a better job. You can be proud that the students in the Mat-Su Borough are performing, especially when we know where they're coming in second grade and them on grade level coming in at kindergarten. So finally, my last slide, graduation rate, it's gone up 13% in the last 8 years. But what I'm expecting, and in fact, out of the Big Five, we have the most stringent graduation requirement diploma. Most school districts require only algebra, so it's to be easier. So your kids are continuing to achieve higher than they get that to the mid to upper 80s assistant superintendent district. And we're the leanest funded out of other districts. So are good stewards of taxpayer money. So that's all I have.
Okay, question.
Superintendent Goya, I was wondering, did you have a chance this, I think it was Donley's commentary on the scores? He's sort of a numbers guy, and I guess the Anchorage School District, and what the bottom line to this commentary was here that they actually had about 200 hours less than average. So I just had a couple questions. And
I can tell you that's on 390 minutes. The national average is 420 minutes. So it's 30 minutes. Districts in the lower 48 have a longer school year.
Right. And that's what I was wondering. So how much? No. And you don't have to answer.
I do
that
know.
Right.
Well, we have 100, and you're required. So it's 170, 172, 100. So 172
hours of instruction per
the
day
school day is
average.
6.5 hours, okay. And between 45 minutes and an hour. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to give you an idea of math, as you move into middle school and high school, they move on a 7 period minutes.
So then you're saying down in the lower 48 that this is how they get the 200 more hours.
Yeah. 35, 50, yeah. 85 hours right there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Senator McKee?
Or I guess Senator Sykes.
To Superintendent Goyette, I thank you for doing this. I mean, you have given still hear people saying we're at the bottom of the heap. We're 48th out of 50. Our schools are. I was just really looking for simple. I do appreciate all the stuff that's on the one sheet. My question for you is a link when this stuff comes up, because I really think it's important that ranks in Alaska, and they want to know where their student ranks nationally, and when we get dumped into the Alaska.
This is hot off the press. We just got it done this afternoon, but we will definitely link it on our
Superintendent Goyette, college, so I really had to study hard, okay? And I'm looking at the option of whether they were going to take this test or not, and 29% decided not to take the test. And if that's the case, that destroys the entire...
In elementary school, only about 3% did a parent refusal. High schools were around 25% and are non-traditional. We did, though, locally, Colony High had 35% of their students opt out. That... My bias would be that opportunity to opt out. And
but
so,
wouldn't
yes.
That, wouldn't
I,
that mean that
I wish they all took
Bowen didn't take it. That would drive up your scores instead of reflecting.
Data, because our participation rates are very high in MAP. We've been doing it for over a decade. Buy-in around MAP. That's why, that's what we really use to drive learning with our families.
Thank you. Thank you for the data. It was very helpful. I think when we and improvements, and this is a great start for that. Next time, it would be interesting to me. I think our career and technical schools should be highlighted in terms of that direction. And several of my because of the fact that there's such a demand right now for those vocational tasks that I think the state delve into. Where did our students go and what did they pursue? I know the cost of tracking those out as best we can. We really need to track those students over time and see what they actually do.
Take two career and technical education courses in a sequence. Our students that take them graduate at a rate of 95% or higher versus the senior class. To educate all of our families that encourage your kids.
No. Member Resner?
I don't want to, as you didn't, and because the newspapers like to take that and people think of that particular test as our tests. Fourth and eighth grade, and how the results are statewide, and they not only strict. So when people are looking at those numbers, it's how people that we can get from that test is that we have some problems in Alaska and address what the problems are because the test results are only are so diverse up here that these other tests that we do, especially the ones that we do. What does NAEP stand for?
National. That's correct.
It's a national.
They say it's
measure.
Random, but we get it every year.
Chairman Dearman, why don't you start?
With Member Rutherford.
I just want to say that in the last few weeks, I've been to Shaview Career and Technical School, and I just want to encourage everyone to please volunteer to talk about your profession at a school, but at least go with, I think, the community, their schools, and talking to our students and seeing for themselves what they're doing rather than just.
Thank you. Every year we have a reach plan, and what we've carried over from the previous years, because our plans are a lot of times to take a look at those, and possibly we could get them to the borough assembly members if we. And it's not that the school board members are so, plus, and our principals and our teachers that also, and our direction under sound principles in education. Thank you.
Member
information on the testing that was presented in a good way that's easy for everyone to understand. Nobody's mentioned it yet, but today what means that he is an adult, but he doesn't remember 911. After that happened, never forget, and lots of people have forgotten, to make sure that all of our students know what happened and the significance of my life. Not nearly as much as the people that were in the States at that time, but for me, the times that our kids have had, comparatively when it comes to hard things that they deal with, but they won't always be that way.
Member,
just because all of the agenda items have really kind of. But I think that, you know, I strongly encourage, if you haven't read it already, because I think it'll do two things. One, it'll show creatively to address the needs of kids and our responsibility to keep. You will, at the end of this document, you will come out with news, safety, and security. We have these images of safety and security with cameras, security guards, and everything else, but there's a lot in this report that contributes in some odd kids that we educate every day. So I really hope you'll take that error and the concern and the ways that we work differently to really address kids. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Member Trimmer had to say it was a very dark elementary school on the morning of 9/11, and all of the kids before they came to school. And Big Lakens came in. Are the airplanes going to hit us? Are the airplanes going to hit us? I'm just watching it on TV. For days, watching the same thing over and over again. I had to go to homes and say, turn off the TV. Talk were in, going on with the trauma. Sorry, I got emotional. Trauma and emotional learning in the 1990s, it was considered new, but I was some take all the courses on it, learned how to instruct it, and programs they had. And I appreciate all the information that was brought up and the information that we tried. There has been the idea of in-group and out-group. We are all here together, and it's in the community. And we are all looking. I appreciate all the work both bodies do and the collaboration that we have. Thank you.
Mr. Brown, Ms. Scheppler, and Dr. Goyette, thank you for the presentations. They were clear to have to share when we're asked questions. They're really good guides. It echoes a bit of what Dr. Welton just said, but this is simple. Look, it's a document that says that we have a 40% partners. And then when you sit back and you look and you see 8 years that our test scores, we are just doing, put forth superhuman effort to the school district, the teachers, the principals, everybody that works ever get around to teaching a child to read or to having us this evening. Thank you for being part of students that are ready to go out and tackle the world upon graduation. You to only do great things in the future, because it has great leadership, and I think that we're headed in the right direction. So thank you very much for this evening.
Well, that's a hard act to follow. All I was going to say, I agree. You know, we need to make sure we have the humanity and are looking at how do we have the best advocates for the school district and the assembly job. And I really appreciated the presentation that Desiree did from district. It's the Matsu Health Foundation. It's United Way. It's the whole community at large.
See, Senator Leonard.
Superintendent, for being here and providing us information on the school board and the superintendent over the next year to make sure we get. I think board member Trimmer stole everything I was going to, and I would have, so I appreciate that. And as we look at our what the first responders that we do have in the borough, our Scylla and Al Palmer, and also our fire and EMS. Again, for the information we got tonight, and look forward to the upcoming year.
Every time the mayor recognizes me, I see the superintendent. But having said that, I want to say this. She's very gracious in dealing with me, and I think she's a great superintendent.
Field.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. But I knew that number was growing because we've been, you know, that's kind of systemic to what our problems are in schools, is we don't have the economic base in a lot of our communities to. Impressed with the Rock Matsu presentation, the intervention there, and economic structure. I firmly, the effort forward to save a child is a waste of money or time. So I just wanted to make that very clear. I never want us to be a child, not be a person. Having said that, I also wanted to mention 9-1 member Trimmer said it best, again, as Mr. Leonard said, is the immense amount of respect that I have for our first responders. I think you've seen it in my actions in the past of how I support them for our first responders. And, 911 is we'll never forget either. Thank you.
Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Assembly members. I really thought there were a lot of thoughtful questions and some insights, and I value life. I was a reporter in Anchorage, and my beat was the Assembly and the school board. And they didn't. I had really never fully thought being approached is very commendable. And 911 was stated when I moose stomped an elderly man to death in front of UAA. Was today. She's in her 30s now. She's still frightened of moose, and we live in moose country, and I'm really glad to hear about those efforts. I really appreciate all of the safety. It's a tough world we live in, but I really think it's good. Thank you very much for pulling this together. It might be worth even a nation for the chart for people who don't understand statistics as to what it. The NAEP scores is, I think somewhere it wouldn't hurt to just say that, clearly show that we are doing well compared with the rest of the state, but I think piece of information. I really appreciate Board Member Rutherford for highlighting that. I didn't really tell tonight, so thank you very much. I would like to thank Superintendent Goyette for maybe she even deserves an award for dealing with Assembly.
Deputy Mayor Beck.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to the school district and to the board for their great work. Small part of that. Over dinner tonight at Taco Bell with my kids who don't think, and I asked them what they did to mark the day at school, and they looked at me like I was an idiot and said, well, we don't, I think it does mean something as a country, and I would like to, it was disappointing that teenagers. But I did want to say, too, I have a happy and a healthy kid that's going to college right now, and the Matsu School District, all the way from kindergarten to graduation, and I can name it was growing. So thank you.
Thank you. And I guess I neglected to see if our staff.
I think the last four assembly meetings we talked about our cyber crisis from the school district came, and they really helped significantly with that first. Called up some family members or a family member to kind of join him. And so so just want to kind of point that out, that we do have good partners. And
some of the assembly members know I've been working on. So I have a question for everyone at this table. Does anyone remember an instance ever and that ships couldn't make it up? You're all looking at me weird. And I ask about that. And I looked up here. I got a variety of people with a variety of walks of life. Somebody we can cite, but I didn't think so either. So that's it.
School board and school districts, and I agreed with Senator McKee's comments on our view. Can you do a PEAKS assessment of assembly members with a no op? It'd be a tough one, but it's so. I'm glad to hear that the school was off to such a good start this fall for raising our children with kindness over arming forces like, other major incidents. So, I used to go to students, and we'd do 50 schools, 90 locations, 200 to 1,000 kids, how the principal acted and how they set the students down and things like that. So I kind of believe in our scores and assessments raising, and it's really values their education, and it is a worry about that society. And 911, I remember the day, the spot in my TV room, watching TV, talking on the phone to my wife, when I have to live with such violence, but I guess that's the way it is. So I kind of easily deliver violence with those methods. So as a society, we got to start working on it as a good reminder of what can happen if we're not vigilant. So thank you. I guess with that, we'll adjourn at, what do we got, 4:45?